हरिः ओ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमाविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 84. The Supreme Lord concluded, "In all my palaces, I can find no other wife as loving as you, O most respected one. When you were married, you disregarded all the kings who had assembled to seek your hand, and simply because you had heard authentic accounts concerning me, you sent a brahmana to me with your confidential message." Right, so then, authentic accounts means she heard from proper authority, right? So it wasn't from devotees. "When your brother, who had been defeated in battle and then disfigured, was later killed during a gambling match on Aniruddha's wedding day, you felt unbearable grief, yet out of fear of losing me, you spoke not a word. By this silence, you have conquered me." Footnote 24. Here Lord Krishna refers to an event that will be described in the next chapter. Thus, Krishna's talks with Rukmini must have taken place after the marriage of Aniruddha. Because there's a discussion, then he'll be going along, he'll mention this, and then Parikshit Maharaj will go, "Oh, I didn't hear about that. What happened there?" So then he'll go back. Or sometimes because something's related, he'll go forward, and then he'll come back to for the continuity. So that's the whole advantage in a discussion, is you don't have to actually worry about chronology. So this modern attachment that it's only history if there's chronology, otherwise then it's not, then they miss the personal point. Right? Does that make sense? Because generally speaking, history, by when it's just chronological, is boring. But when it's taking a particular theme, then it becomes interesting. Does that make sense? So that's why then, because the whole point is just trying to learn something from it. If it's just a matter of memorizing facts, and the facts have to be in a particular order, then how that's going to work in your life? What's the value going to be? But when we see that it's about what you're going to gain from this history, learning from these people and situations and what they did and what the results were, then it's how to put the stories together so that they match, so they go together. So we can study like this, and then in explaining we may put things together or keep them in like this. It doesn't matter. It's whatever's going to work best for the particular situation. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's then what we have to see. "When you sent the messenger with your most confidential plan, and yet I delayed going to you, you began to see the whole world as void and wanted to quit your body, which could never have been given to anyone but me. May this greatness of yours remain with you always. I can do nothing to reciprocate except joyfully thank you for your devotion." Right? Because the devotion is then so much greater. That's what impresses Krishna. So there's nothing technically he can do. Right? To reciprocate that. But he reciprocates by that. And that's what the devotee wants. But technically, he's pointing out the devotion is actually the most valuable thing in the cosmos. Yes. That's the thing. There's nothing you can trade for that. That's why we say when we come in contact with devotional service that we've gotten that, then that you can't pay that back. That's why then we eternally remain the servant of the spiritual master. Does that make sense? Because you can't repay that. So that's the...
Regarding this particular point on voidness.
This particular point on voidness.
Rukmini experiences this. Lord Chaitanya says, "Shunyantam Jagata Sarvam."
Yes.
So when he's saying about how he feels the world,
The voidness, yes.
What is this experience?
But she's she's feeling the void. Lord Chaitanya's feeling the void. So you're wondering if there's something there in this voidness. So are the Buddhists onto something?
What is this Buddhism voidness, and what is Buddhism voidness? I know, but what is this voidness?
Okay, so you know one voidness, you want to know what the other voidness is. The other voidness is, means that contact with Krishna, that where you feel that unlimited aspect, but it's in separation, so therefore everything feels empty. Yeah?
Yes.
Works?
Yes. Okay.
Yeah?
When you say there is nothing for reciprocation, for devotion, can we say that the only way is devotion?
Yes, that's why Krishna is, he's devoted to his devotees.
Yes.
But what he's saying is there's nothing specific. So it itself, that's the point. May this great mood remain with you always. May she always be in this mood. Yes. And that only then with that reciprocation like he's now, that's all they can do. In other words, the only thing for devotion is devotion. There isn't anything that matches or equals it. So that's why you see you have Krishna who's unlimited. And then they were doing the thing with the weight.
Yes.
And they couldn't do anything because I think it was, who was it, Narad Muni? Then said that, he was taking Krishna. And then they were saying, no, you have to, leave Krishna here. And then he said, okay, then you give me, equal in wealth, like that. It's only fair. So then they're bringing everything, and they can't. All their jewelry, everything, and still nothing budge. And I'm not sure who came along with the tulsi leaf. Rukmini. Then she came and gave one tulsi leaf. So it's bhakti then. Is that? That's the whole point. So bhakti, but that's why we say bhakti is independent. This thing that bhakti is dependent on karma and jnana is totally not there. We, being conditioned, we find there's certain situations that are more favorable or not. But technically, since it's all Krishna, and one has devotion to Krishna, there's nothing that you can't see the connection to Krishna. Right? So that seeing Krishna in that favorable way, means how he likes. Favorably means how he likes. Right? Favorable doesn't just mean sentiment, it means how he likes. Right? So the sentiment is part of it. But you want to use the form also that he appreciates. But even if not, just the devotion is there. Even if the form's not ideal, it's still the devotion is the main. Because the other is just the expression. In other words, you like something, you like a particular form. Like, it's just like, let's say someone likes to go out for a picnic. They like to go to certain spots. You could have a picnic anywhere. But they like certain spots. So that's what you mean by favorable. So it's in consideration. So, but it's the devotion. So therefore, that's what Krishna reciprocates with. So he's giving her blessing that this mood that she has, that will remain. And then he'll reciprocate with that. But there's nothing you can give materially. So it's improper to try to compare them. That if, our management skills are better than devotional service, or if we have all these good, modern, mundane qualities, then devotional service will go better. Or whatever it is that if of our, I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer, I'm the friend of all living entities. Whichever form of it in its euphemistic, presentation you want to give and try to claim that's bhakti, it never is. That's the meaning of bhakti's independence. So the only thing you can reciprocate bhakti with is bhakti. That's that? Yeah. So since we worship him as money, he reciprocates his money. But you don't get anything solid out of it. Because it's only when you deal with Krishna in devotion, he reciprocates that way. That's where the real thing is. Because we being part and parcel of him, if he's not happy, how will we be happy? So he won't be happy with just we see him as money or things or anything like that. So it is him. And if you approach in the proper way, he reciprocates that approach. Because at least you followed the rules regarding money or, power or influence or these kind of things. But then the problem is it's not about him as a person, so therefore how does he reciprocate with you as a person? So therefore it's just, you did this right, you get that right. You get this right, you get the results for that right. That's it. It won't be more. It won't have that that taste. You won't get ananda from it. So it's just situational. You did this situation, you manipulated the situation this way, therefore the situation will transform in such a way that you appreciate. That's it. But it won't give anything for the soul. So it's really on chit and ananda, there's nothing. And sad, it's temporary. Right? But when you're dealing devotion, it's about him as a person, therefore if he's pleased, we'll be pleased. Right? Is that yes.
So you mean as opposed to those things, you mean dealing with him as a person, like through the deity form or the Bhagavatam or the holy name or this?
Yep, all of those, but anything that's recommended. I mean, so in other words, what's recommended is how to deal with Krishna, the person.
Yeah, but it's recommended. Like, Krishna the person likes you to do, like you're going about your life, and Krishna the person has recommended and likes you to deal with this, this, and this, like that. So isn't that still dealing with Krishna's person?
Yes, that's what we're saying.
But you just said that that's not...
Like, but the point is this, is it the things that you're dealing with that Krishna's impressed with, or it's because you're doing it because that's how he likes it? That's the point. You have to be able to discern between the primary and secondary. Yeah. Yes.
Maharaj, in Prema Bhagavad, we glorify Bhakti Devi daily. So who is Bhakti Devi?
Bhakti Devi is a combination between the Samvit and Ladini Shakti. So that combination. That's why you see it's the process and it's the means. I mean, it's the process and it's the result. Because you chant Hare Krishna, it's the process, but the result is you chant Hare Krishna. You know, you use devotion as the method, but you also gain that devotion. She's that combination.
So who's the
that means she's a part of his internal...
It's the internal potency, but her... That means Radharani is she's Sarup Shakti, but she's manifesting as the personification of the Hladini potency.
Yeah.
Right? And then Sarup Shakti also then has, where you're dealing with the Samvit and Sandini, you know, specifically the Sandini, but that is support of Samvit, that'll be the Yoga Maya. Right? So that way then between there, so Bhakti Deva will just be that combination between Samvit and Hladini. Because Samvit and Hladini, that will get Yoga Maya. You know, Samvit and Hladini, that you'll get Bhakti Devi. Or did I just say the same thing twice?
Yeah.
Okay. Samvit and Sandini, you have Yoga Maya. Samvit and Hladini, you have Bhakti Devi. And Hladini, you have Radharani. Like that. Who the personality is, that I haven't heard. Many try to put it together with Vrinda Devi because they're said together, but then, you know, just because they're said together doesn't necessarily mean they're the same person. They may be. Point is any of the internal potency is Bhakti Devi. So it's that devotional aspect of, in other words, performing. Hladini is the result, is the experience of the result gained, but the point is you have to perform the activity to get. So in that way, Radharani is the personification of devotional service, because she knows what's devotional service. We're only assisting in her devotional, we're assisting her assistance in devotional service. You know, so, you know, ultimately it's Radharani, but at the same time as in the past times, if that specific is Radharani or another, then it doesn't like that. But in this case, when we're saying this, we're dealing more with the principle of it.
Devotees usually say that Bhakti Devi is Vrinda Devi because we pray to her daily, that Vishnu Bhakti Pradaya Devi.
So Vrinda Devi, what you're saying, devotees say that she's the Bhakti Devi because we pray to her, but we don't pray to Radharani or Subhadra Devi or anyone else. We don't pray to Lord Chaitanya for, you know, pure love for Krishna. So does that make him Bhakti Devi? You know what I'm saying? If we follow the logic, it's not... I'm just saying it's because we say... You know, say them to right after each other, so then.
That's a proximity thing.
Yes, proximity.
Vedanta Sutra always proves that it's not correct. we do it all the time.
Yes. So now you can quote Vedanta Sutra. Then. It's not proximity. Okay. Yes? Okay. Because I haven't seen that anybody's mentioned, so therefore why should we speculate? Okay, so may this greatness of yours remain with you always. May she always have that manifestation of devotion. And I can do nothing to reciprocate except joyfully thank you for your devotion. So then he'll reciprocate by that exchange of her devotion. He'll reciprocate with that because there's nothing specifically you can do. Right? Because things generate results. So there's no activity or result gained that can pay back devotion. His devotion is an attitude. So it's simply Krishna's attitude that he reciprocates with the devotees. That's the only way. Yes.
Usually at this particular point, Natarayaham, that Krishna says to the gopis,
yes,
it's usually associated only with their devotion because it's unalloyed. You're unalloyed.
No, but anybody's devotion is, it can't be. It means someone in Vaikuntha, how do you repay that devotion? There isn't anything, right? In other words, someone has pure love for Krishna. How much gold is that worth? Right? You know what I'm saying? So there isn't anything you can pay with. So it's the same thing. But of those, then the gopis are the topmost.
But for example, if we take Vaikuntha, we can say that because they aspire for four types of liberation.
They can get that liberation, yes.
Their payment.
But that's there. But what about the devotion in applying that using that liberated position in Krishna's service?
Then they get Krishna's association.
And so do the gopis. So does Rupa. Does that make sense? So, in other words, you can't pay that. But of that, then it's like Vaikuntha is perfect. Mathura is more perfect. Vrindavan is most perfect. So that would mean that this applies to all devotees, but since it applies the most to the gopis, they're the example given. Mm. Like that. Yeah.
Lord Ramachandra says the same thing to Hanuman.
He says the same thing to Hanuman.
When he comes back after getting the information about Sita, uh-huh, and then he just embraces him.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I can't give you anything. I can't pay back for you.
Mm. Okay, he can't pay back Hanuman, so he just, yeah.
This trademark statement of Lord many times.
Yes, so that's the position, is devotion is what attracts him. Mm. So it applies to all, because they're dealing in that one way, he reciprocates in that form. Mm. But the form of where he reciprocates like that is in Braja Bhakti, you see that's with the gopis. That's the most, the form of it. Mm. Right there. Yeah. But otherwise, it's whatever, how they approach him, he reciprocates. So that's the basic principle. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, and so the self-satisfied Supreme Lord of the universe enjoyed with the Goddess of Fortune, engaging her in lovers' talks, and thus imitating the ways of human society. Right? So it's a medium for bhakti. In other words, the secondary form. And so then he's using this human form of discussions between husband and wife for expressing their devotion. Like that. So that's the whole aspect there. Because you have to put in the maximum work and effort and all this. So it's the best for the use. So in other words, the human platform is the best because you actually have to put in so much effort in that. So Srila Sanatana Goswami remarks, though enjoying in himself, he enjoyed with Rukmini, Ramaya, because he was directly the Supreme Lord, Bhagavan, who appeared as the son of Devaki, Devaki Sutta, instead of Jagat Ishwara. To play, he imitated or confirmed his human pastimes, or he derided the human world devoid of the happiness and experiencing in his pastimes, right? So he's following that human pastimes, but the point is without Krishna, then these pastimes themselves are useless, right? So the only taste is going to be in the Lord performing human pastimes, not in us performing human pastimes. Like that. Or he fooled the human world, which saw his pastimes as only material love. Right? So those who went to see that way, they just saw that. At the same time, he's pointing out that the pastimes of this world don't really have much value without connection to him. At the same time is that it just, his pastimes, he's doing this for fun, because it brings out, using human as the secondary, then you have to put in all the nice effort that's there, and so that just enhances relationship. Right? Because if he's just the Ishwara, then whatever he desires, it happens. So where's the reciprocation on his part? So it's the devotion in which his energies are reciprocating, that is the important part. Not that he's the controller of everything. The important part is that devotion, his control, means his energies then fulfill his desire, but their fulfilling that desire is done in devotion. That devotion is what attracts him, because his energies in himself are non-different. So it's the devotion of his energies to him that is the attractive feature. So yeah? No? Yes.
Can we say that devotion happens between Ashray and Vishay when Vishay is Krishna? It can't happen with anybody else.
Means rasa.
Yeah.
Means if we're talking about rasa in as Vaikuntha rasa, then yes. But if we're talking about the other two levels, then it's wherever that principle is there of the Ashray and Vishay. Because the form, the secondary form, will be the same. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so it's just a matter of whether in that interaction, it's about the senses, it's about the emotions, or it's about Krishna.
Right.
But the form and how rasa works is the same. That's why when we discuss rasa, even though it's technical because we've never thought about it, then, you know, for this activity, it gains this result, and therefore these experiences, then we can relate to it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. But those who can't relate to it, then there's too much of the impersonal aspect because they're too frustrated by the material world. So they doubt anything could be nice. That's why they don't like stories that have nice endings, because they say that's unreal, you know. But yes, in their life it is, but in other lives it's not necessarily, you know. It's just they don't have the karma for a good ending, so right. You know what I'm saying? They can't even get themselves run over by a train, but you know, so yeah. Yes,
the difficulty in understanding that principle between Ashray and Vishay was bhakti is Krishna's energy.
Yes.
However, in rasa, it's generated from the Ashray, so it's in the devotee.
Yes.
So
but the point is that Krishna is the source of that. That's why it's said he is the, you know, the Vedanta Sutra point. He is the efficient cause, and he's the, you know, that whatever it is, the material cause, or that external cause that's there, ingredient cause, that being this way being ingredient. So he is the origin and he is the ingredients, because he is rasa. So therefore the devotee is the ashray of that particular aspect of rasa of Krishna. So Krishna's unlimited rasa, but then the individual has an attraction to serve Krishna and interact with Krishna in a particular aspect of that unlimited rasa. And that's how we define it as this particular rasa. Because Krishna isn't in a rasa. He is rasa.
Yes.
But the devotees then appreciate that particular part. Mother Jashoda, then the child aspect, you know, interacting with him as a child, the gopis, the cowherd boys. And so they're the ashray of that aspect, but he is all, because otherwise, if they're the ashray, how is he able to reciprocate if it's just coming from them? It means he is rasa. They have a particular attraction to him. They interact with him based on that, but because he is that rasa, therefore then he interacts accordingly. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's why it works very nicely with Krishna, because Krishna is rasa. In the material world, then if people, everybody follows the rules that go with it, then your sense, it's about the secondary. Then, because the secondary is performed, then we'll be appreciative. People say, no, but I want the real thing. It's not just externals. But how are you going to know that you have the real thing unless it's expressed through externals? So we still put the focus on the externals. That's why then sadhana starts with the externals. But even you get to the platform of rag, it's not that they don't use externals. It's just that it's not about the externals. It's about that expressing that love for Krishna, and using externals is how it's done. Right? You know, someone's cooking is important to them, but how do you manifest cooking except through the externals? Does that make sense? They go to, that's why they're non-different. But at the same time, they're different. They're non-different because they're one entity, but at the same time, they're the Vishaya aspect and the Ashraya aspect of that entity. Yeah. So then the rasa works very well this way. So that's how he can reciprocate with unlimited living entities, because they're only, each living entity is only reciprocating with an aspect of himself. For us, unlimited is outside of us, but for Krishna, that is him. He is unlimited. But he's a person. So he can do that. We can't. We can be in touch with, and we can therefore experience that eternal and personal aspect. That's why if it's with him, then it feels so full, and if it's without him, then it feels so empty. You know, therefore Lord Chaitanya is saying, one moment it feels like 12 years or more. It's just like an emptiness. Because it's Krishna without Krishna, personally. And there was Krishna with him there personally, then it has that, there's nothing, you don't want anything else. So the point is, it's always about Krishna. So there's no problem of this thing of a distance or other aspects like that that are giving the problem, because you're with Krishna, but at the same time, one gives the flavor of being with Krishna, one gives the flavor of not being with Krishna, though in both you're with Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah, so in other words, it's beyond the understanding of logic. So,
we need to accept that Krishna is inconceivable.
We have to accept he's inconceivable, yes. Yeah. That's why the word's included in our philosophy. Yeah, we might, most of the time I'll just say one and different, but actually, no, it's inconceivably one and different. That's actually the proper. Yeah. The word Bhagavan indicates his power. The combination of power with human-like actions produces the greatest sweetness. Right? Because it's human-like, but because he has that unlimited power, all that power is going through the human pastimes. So you get this highest, greatest sweetness there. This is because he was the son of Devaki. Right? So he had all these different aspects. So because he's the son of Devaki, not Jagadishwara, that's why this taste is coming. Because Rukmini, what she tastes, is greater than what Lakshmi will taste. Because Lakshmi, he's Jagadishwara, right? Vaikunthapati has no parents. If you want to get technical, okay, then they all expanded from Sankarshan, and then from there you get, and then each of the Chaturvyuha has their expansions, and then from there, that way you get to 24, so it doesn't really work out that way. So it doesn't have as much sweetness. But then when you get into human pastimes, that's the difference. Vaikuntha is just Vaikuntha, means he's just God. But the Goloka, then he performs human pastimes. That's the difference. Even though it may have that element of Vaikuntha and Dwarka, of grandeur, but it still is human pastimes and grandeur. Does that make sense? And Vrindavan is just human, is just the human pastimes, no grandeur. Right? So it's just the sweetness, because that's what adds. But the point is, it's not that the power isn't there. but it's not appreciated as such. It's simply appreciated from the platform of the human pastime and just the fullness of it. Mm. So, yeah. Good. Srila Sukadeva Goswami concluded, "The Almighty Lord Hari, preceptor of all the worlds, similarly behaved like a conventional householder in the palaces of his other queens, performing the religious duties of a family man." So, from understanding how he's interacting with Rukmini, we can understand all the rest. So it'll be according to their particular uniqueness, relationship, you know, what particular services they render. So like that, then he'll reciprocate. And so in this way, then the you know, his householder pastimes are going on. Srila Prabhupada concludes in Krishna book, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, certainly has no business being anyone's husband or son or father, because everything belongs to him and everyone is under his control." So how would he be a husband, father, or son? Because they're all expansions of him, his energies, his part and parcels, so they're all him. So where would this come in, right? "He does not require anyone's help for his satisfaction, because if interacting with them, because, you know, but they're part of him, so he could interact with himself like that." I mean, it's just by his existence. Right. "But when the Lord descends to play the part of a human being, he plays a role either as a husband, son, friend, or enemy in full perfection. As such, when he is playing as a perfect husband of the queens, especially Rukmini, he enjoyed conjugal love in complete perfection," right? Because she's going to be the most fullest manifestation of the husband and wife relationship. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So then that's going to, you're going to see the greatest perfection there. It'll be perfect with all the other queens, but the greatest perfection will be with her, because all aspects are there. Because remember, Radharani's appeared as Rukmini, so that means that she's the Sarup Shakti, complete aspect. All other expansions are part of that. So Krishna, in that degree, will reciprocate with them. So what aspect of attraction they have for him, that aspect he'll manifest and interact with them. So it'll go on perfectly. Right? "According to Vedic culture, although polygamy is allowed, none of one's wives should be ill-treated. In other words, one may take many wives only if he's able to satisfy all of them equally as an ideal householder. Otherwise, it is not allowed." So it's not the principle is that, oh, you can have many wives. The principle is that you can have as many wives as you can actually fully satisfy each wife. Right? So Krishna here is just to show some opulence has 16,108, and each one is perfectly satisfied. Each has their own palace, own grounds, own gardens, and he stays with them all day, even though he's with the others. So that should be the first hint. Maybe we shouldn't try this at home, right?
Inconceivable.
Yes, so that's what he is. Inconceivable. Yes, so therefore, only he can actually do it. Others can do to some degree, but material, you can never get perfection. So even though they're doing it, it'll never be its ideal. Right? So that's the whole, as we'll get to in the next canto with Pingala, she mentions that there's never been a case in history where a man has ever satisfied a woman. Right? Because a materialistic man doing things for himself cannot satisfy a materialistic woman who's doing things for herself. So it's never happened. So only in devotional service, then there can be satisfaction, because then that cooperation in Krishna consciousness. Right. So the form may be there, but it won't be. So in any case, still it has to have the form of that satisfaction. Does that make sense? So everybody has their own facility, own interaction, own uniqueness. In other words, it can't be the same. It has to be unique. Because each woman is different, therefore the uniqueness in the relationship has to be able to be brought out. Therefore, that she has her own place set up in her own way, the interactions there, what she likes to do, it has to be that. It can't be that you all just have one flat and everybody fits in. That's not what it's talking about. So in other words, that's why then, with the example of Lord Ramachandra, then one has one wife. Right? Right? You see? Yeah. Yeah, because this point here, it's allowed only if that's it. Otherwise, it is not allowed. It's not that it's just a blanket. Yeah. Lord Krishna is the world teacher. Therefore, even though he had no need for a wife, he expanded himself into as many forms as he had wives. And he lived with them as an ideal householder, observing the regulative principles, rules, and commitments in accordance with the Vedic injunctions and the social laws and customs of society. For each of his 16,108 wives, he simultaneously maintained different palaces, different establishments, and different atmospheres. Right? So the palace is there, then how you establish the palace, how it'll be set up. You know, what furnitures, what arrangements, what's like, and then what atmospheres, what's the mood, what's the flavor. So all of them were different. Thus, the Lord, although one, exhibited himself as 16,108 ideal householders. So, yes.
So, Kamaya, today we saw Nidanta Sutra, he desired to become man.
Yeah, he desired to become man. So, conclusion. Even though shaken by Krishna's words, Rukmini's mind could not be pulled away from him. Right, that's the whole point in devotional sutra, because everything's him. So even if it's a not a nice situation, it's still connected with him. When the affectionate bond between a young man and young woman can never be destroyed, even when there is cause for the destruction of that relationship, the attachment between them is said to be pure love. This is the nature of the eternal loving affairs between Lord Krishna and his pure conjugal associates. Right, so that's where we see this pure love. Here, then, it's not as pure, or may not be love, but whatever. You know, so the whole idea is that here, to that degree, that we follow, like it said there, he said, he lived as an ideal house, observing the regulative principles, rules, and commitments in accordance with the Vedic injunctions and social laws and customs of society. Right? So that means that the injunctions, social laws, and customs. So you have the base general injunction, you have the specific laws, and then you have the custom means how the locale, how they apply that. Does that make sense? In that way, you get the uniqueness. So like all in all the traditional Indian, you know, regions, they're all following the Shastra. But at the same time, is you get these slight regional differences. These are the different customs. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So just how it goes through, whether they eat rice and chapatis, just rice, just chapatis, yes. But all of them meet the criteria of the Vedic injunctions and the social laws. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? But you'll get that. So each house had that uniqueness. So that's the whole point, is that unless we're following all the things, then it won't give that flavor. Krishna is. We may do because of the benefits we'll get. So that's that much is good enough. Because if the husband and wife are committed to the relationship, even though it may be about themselves, but they're committed to the relationship, it works for both. Because the idea is that one's functioning in the relationship to be God conscious. And if so, by being in that situation, one can be God conscious. It doesn't matter if the other person is doing it because they want to become God conscious. It's connected to Krishna. It's perfect. They're following the rule. It works nicely. And so that will bring us to the platform of the spiritual world, where then we will have that nice eternal relationship with Krishna. And then, you know, that's there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Chapter 61. Lord Balaram slays Rukmi. Okay. Now we. Yeah. Okay. What was that? Pratigya. The relationships with his devotees are the most important for Krishna. So we're starting to see a theme here. You know, all these particular. They're giving different aspects of. It's just the devotion. between the Lord and the devotee. So the Lord's qualities, how he protects the devotees, that's the most important. Or the devotees, how they're always surrendered no matter what happens, or whatever they do, they always see it. If you notice that all these patikyas that have been going through, they're all mentioning the same point of devotion, but from various angles. That's the advantage of all these stories, because we see the same thing from a variety of angles, and that completes our understanding. Does that make sense? Okay, chapter 61 summarizes questions and answers. Prikamars asked Sukadeva Goswami 1032, or probably question 1032 of Srimad Bhagavatam, from 1061:20. How could Rukmi give his daughter to his enemy's son? After all, Rukmi had been defeated by Lord Krishna in battle and was waiting for an opportunity to kill him. Please explain this to me, O learned one, how these two inimical parties became united through marriage, right? So Rukmi's daughter then married Aniruddha. Right? Huh? His daughter's Usha. I thought Banasura's daughter's Usha. So this is Aniruddha has another wife. Yes?
This, I think, is a different Aniruddha. That Aniruddha is grandson of Krishna.
And this Aniruddha? Oh well, you don't worry about it. You can't keep track of it because Prabhupada said this only Jadarani can remember all these things.
This Aniruddha is grandson of Krishna because he's Pradyumna's son.
He's Pradyumna's son, so it is the same.
Yeah.
So it must be either it's Kalpabheda or he has more than one wife.
But here it says Rukmavati. So.
Rukmavati.
Then how in relation wise then she becomes like aunt Rukmi's daughter? If he's the grandson, she becomes an aunt relation wise.
Don't take it too far. Srila Sukadeva Goswami answers the question in the universe. Otherwise, it's like, okay, if contamination goes by touch, and my hand's dirty, and if I touch the table's touching the rug, that's touching the floor, that's touching the earth, you know, and the earth is, you know, the whole mandala, and that's connected to Meru, in which everything. So when I touch this table, then Indra's Asan becomes contaminated. Yeah, you don't want to do that.
So he says, Rukmi gave his granddaughter, Rochana, to his daughter's son.
Granddaughter.
Yeah. Aniruddha, despite Rukmi's relentless envy with Lord Hari. So
okay, so it's granddaughter. Okay, now the ant problem is solved. Yes, okay.
It's a very close relation, the two.
Mother's brother. Didn't we already discuss this?
Yeah, we discussed that.
Yeah, so and therefore, because they're a different gotra.
Mm.
Yeah, because she's coming from that other gotra, but she becomes your gotra. So that means her brother is still another gotra. But your brother's children, they're the same gotra.
Mm.
Right? Does that make sense? So only if the daughter marries someone else, then she becomes that other gotra. But that doesn't mean now you can marry her because she's another gotra. Because she's already married. Yeah? Okay. Cool. Okay.
Like, same question on this gotra stuff.
Okay.
When they say that the nadis are same, implies gotras are same.
Nadis. What are the nadis?
You say that when boy and girl, they plan to get married in the horoscopes, they say that the nadis are same, implies they cannot get married because they will not have progeny. That's why, does that mean that the gotras are same? Or is it different?
I wouldn't have a clue. I'll have to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Adhyaya Prakashika. Mm-hmm. This chapter lists Lord Krishna's sons, grandsons, and other progeny. It also describes how Lord Balaram killed Rukmi at Aniruddha's marriage ceremony, and how Lord Krishna arranged for his sons and daughters to be married. Not understanding the full truth about Krishna, each of his wives thought that since he remained constantly in her palace, she must be his favorite wife. Right? So these are tips. You might say, well, how does it work? These are the tips. Okay. They were all entranced by Lord Krishna's beauty and his loving conversations with them, but they could not agitate his mind with the charming gestures of their eyebrows or by any other means, right? So in other words, those are just means for expressing affection, but it doesn't create, it doesn't create lust in him. They can't control him by these. It's just a matter of that they dealing and using the conjugal moods and methods to express their devotion to Krishna. And Krishna reciprocates in the conjugal methods. But it's not that they control him by the conjugal methods. Right? That's, again, the same point is that there's the method and then there's the primary aspect that you're expressing through the method. But Krishna will reciprocate within that method, but it's not because he's controlled by the method. He's controlled by the affection. But he therefore, he'll show affection back using the same natural method. Does that make sense? So it's not that he's controlled by that method. We become controlled because we come into the control of the modes of nature. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Now here in the situation, everyone, Krishna and the Queen, have the right intent to please each other. Their intent is to please Krishna,
yes, but what they're pointing out is it's not because of the charming gestures and eyebrows that he becomes conquered. It's because of the devotion in which it's offered. Because we have to remember, he is the charming gesture and he is the eyebrow. Right? So therefore, it's already him. So it's the devotion in which it's done that attracts him. But because it's done in that context, he reciprocates in the same way through that context. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, Rukmini then may, you know, in charming gestures, Krishna doesn't reciprocate with a nice Punjabi whack on the back. You know, like that. You understand? So he'll do things that match. Right? You know, now, you know, if you know, Arjuna or someone like that, now he may get a whack on the back. Because it matches. So that's the thing, you use the same medium. Just like you took potatoes, offered them, put them on the altar, and then Krishna eats them. So you've offered your devotion to Krishna through the medium potatoes, and Krishna accepts that devotion, reciprocates through the medium of potatoes. So if you put potatoes and came back and it was pumpkin, you might get annoyed. Even though Lord Shiva will glorify pumpkin over potatoes any day. But it's better. And then you're thinking it was better when it was worse. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, it's amazing how the. Yeah. So that would mean that Ravana could get all the benefits of the nightshade vegetables because his brother stayed over in Brazil. And then because that, you know, that whole thing was destroyed, then the connection between Brazil and India was lost for so long, and so it took till the Portuguese came along. Then again, they were reintroduced. Yeah. I'm not exactly sure how we got there, but
devotion and not secondary means.
Yes. Oh, yeah, we were talking about the potatoes. Yeah. Yes.
All right. So the question is, Vaidhi sadhana, it's about rules and regulations.
Yes.
And it's pretty external.
Yes.
So how is that pleasing to Krishna?
Because we're pretty external. So now what's happening is we're using our externalness in activities that are favorable to Krishna. So we think externally. We're the body, you know, we're the mind, we're all these different things. And so, therefore, we're engaging the body and mind in Krishna's service in ways that are favorable to him. That's why, means that's, Bhaktivinoda Thakur defines that favorableness means what he likes. So then that would mean that I would perform sadhana bhakti by performing activities that Krishna would like. So this whole idea is, no, we're Westerners, we should do whatever we like. Because Krishna doesn't, it doesn't matter, it's only the devotion. Yes, that devotion part, that part will be good, but everything else won't be pleasing to Krishna. Why can't we make the effort? That's the devotion and the medium are favorable to Krishna. It means if it's not, then we do whatever we want. I remember once, on Sankirtan, then they bought some stuff for, to eat. But then you're in the van, and it's got windows and all that. And so then, people look in through the windows. So you have the things that, whatever it was, I can't remember. It was called like bananas or something. So you have to make the offering. So normally you have the little picture there, and then you put the things out in the front and this and that and this one. But everyone's watching, so then you just put the picture in the bag with the bananas, so then, he can eat in private. So you're doing, but the principle is that it's there. You're trying to please Krishna according to what would be, so the principle is he's able to eat peacefully without people looking. That's why we close the curtain, this and that. So here we don't have a curtain, we have a bag. So he goes in the bag, right? So, right? Does that make sense? Yeah. But if you have an opportunity for the other, you wouldn't say, no, we're Westerners. We just, sit outside and let everybody look at everything, and that way we get an indigestion and then blame it on the food afterwards. Right? So, that's then why would we do that when the opportunity is there? Just because we don't like it. Because if we say Westerners, well, that's because we don't like it. Because how do you define Westerners? That's the whole thing, because I'm sure that Europe would distance themselves from Americans who say they're Westerners. I'm not sure what they would call them. Really, really far, far Easterners, right? Does that make sense? And when you go to the East Bloc, they'll consider Western Europe as Westerners, and they're not Westerners. It just keeps going like that. I'm sure in China, if you're out in the Gobi Desert, that's the Westerners, right? You're in Shanghai, then you're East, right? Like that. So it's just, does that make sense? So the whole point is it's favorable to Krishna, so you wouldn't bring in these kind of things. You would put it into the context, yes, but you wouldn't use that as a method, because it's not about any sacrifice on our part for Krishna. Now, if you say, it's difficult, I'm sacrificing this part, then that's good. And that part is recommended by scripture, but you wouldn't make it, say, equal. It's like Brahma was telling the demigods, don't make two things that are unequal equal. Like that, yes.
How do we know what constitutes favorable?
What the acharyas recommend. Their example, their recommendation, like that.
So, can we say that anything which is situated on the platform of goodness with the attempt to please is something which is favorable to bhakti?
Yes, you could say use that as a very general, so you could try to fit things in, yes. Yes, but we see that's why the Purana is so... is the prominent scripture in Kali Yuga as opposed to Upanishads. Because here you see the example. Right? It means these nice, it means, like there, you take the thing. Krishna has come home, whatever, he wants to, spend some time with his wife, then Prabhupada mentions that this joking conversation between husband and wife are the highest kind of pleasure in grihastha life. Is that something that you can, always maintain, always carry on in the various situations? And so then he applies that, in some way, and because he is so, one of his qualities is Gambira, he's grave, so then she didn't understand it was a joke. And so then how did he behave when she didn't react the way he expected? Right, she became distressed. He didn't go, it was a joke. Why are you being so trippy and things like that? Can't you take a joke? He didn't do that. He then got there, picked her up, and like that, and then dealt very nicely, sweetly. First of all, explained how the relationship between them, that's the most important, and that's everything. And then after that, once that's comfortable, then move into that, just in the mood of that, he just wanted to exchange these loving words between husband and wife. Therefore, he was making a joke. So it was only meant as a joke. He went through all that before he said it was a joke. So that's how it's done. So that's why it's there. So that's favorable to Krishna. So then if the devotees as husbands and wives, this is how they'll deal. They follow that example because he's doing human pastimes. So that means that's how humans interact. So he's doing that and finding the taste of it because it's more, he's the controller. Just because he desires it, should it happens. So he goes through all this difficulty to work to make it happen. Only humans have to do that. Right? And so therefore, then that's for him fun because he is the controller. Then it's fun taking the human part where you're not the controller. So this is the method. Right? If we were Rakshasas, then we would follow Ghatotkacha's example. But we're not. We're in human form. We follow these ones. Does that make sense? And so then from there, we can see so many things. But if you're aware of it, you see them when they come up, because it's only a moment here and there. But the principle is there, because it's going to be different. So you just have to give one example in that particular area. That principle then is applied in all other, because it's unlimited. Because whatever worked today won't work tomorrow. That's just how it is. That's the nature of women, is that it's always a variety, always changing. Because if it wasn't, it was exactly the same every day, then, you know, then it's like the guy walking into the office, morning, George, morning, Harold. That's it. That's their relationship. It was a good day. Yeah, we're good, you know. Like that, you know. It'll be the same 20 years later. Good morning, George. Morning, Harold. You know. That's it. It's not going to get any more. So, you know, wife means to expand. You know, it's got to get more than that. You know, so at least you have to say, how are you doing this morning, you know, George, you know, like that. You know, so it has to expand. You know? Does that make sense? Sorry? Okay. So, like that, it has to change. So you can only give an example that shows the principle. You can't say, oh, you have to give all the details. No, you give the detail, you give the principle and one detail to show the example. The rest of it, you have to work it out, because that's the way it's going to be. So like that, then you can see is that by performing these pastimes like this, Krishna gives all the example, all the acharyas give the example, all the great personalities. So if you're aware, then you can work it out. And then by a good association and all these things, then you have it there. But if we, instead of Bhagavatam, we turn to these, you know, modern books, they'll never give, they don't know what the principle is. They've observed some things and put it together into a pattern, but they don't know actually what the principle is. So they give a pattern. And that pattern is the form of details. So if the pattern happens to be moving in the area of the details that is explained and you use it at that time, it will work. But once it shifts, you don't know what to do, it falls apart again. So that's the thing. So the Vedic, it always works. Continues because you know the principle. So you have to work. You have to use your brain. Like that. Yes.
Is it also that it's more of a male intelligence that can work out the principle from the thing given? But woman needs a specific example because it's more, like they want to be built into the journey, they need more.
Yeah, you could say the example is there, but at the same time, is that example for them means the whole package. See, man has to work it out mechanically what it is. The woman just catches the vibe. And so, therefore, whatever she's doing, if it matches the vibe, she continues. If it doesn't, she adjusts until it does. While the man will then see if it's mechanically working according to the thing. And if it does, he'll continue. If not, he'll adjust. You understand? Because for the woman, it's a mood. Because today you do something in a particular mechanical way. If tomorrow you do the same thing. And today the mechanics match the mood. It worked. Tomorrow you'd use the same mechanics, but the mood's different. It doesn't work. And the woman will say, "You don't understand." She means it's a mood. It's not the mechanics. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
I was just going to say, instead of having these grihastha courses and stuff on all sorts of different things in amongst devotees, maybe we should have one that uses this, because
yes, means
people can't read this, like people can't catch this from just reading it. So I think it should be.
Yes, no, it's there. It's there. It means it's not that there's not good content in when they do these Grihastha courses, but the point is that if you're able to catch the principle yourself by your own analyzation and able to apply it yourself, it'll work. Because if they're thinking that this is what I did, you have to do that, it will never work because every woman's different. And in fact, that's what the Vatsyayana makes that point. One of the reasons that women become upset with men or not interested in a particular person is because they treat them like how someone else treats their wife. You know, the guy says, "Yeah, well, this is what I do with my wife," and if you try that, it will fail 100%. Because it has to be for that. That's why unless the principle is given, which we see here, that will work for all of them. So it points out is it gave an example, and then we saw Krishna like that he applied in all the palaces with all the wives. So you have to catch that part of it. So there is something valuable there and their experience and all that, but because it's put into the context of just technique, then it doesn't actually work. So you'll see that if you know men are giving, it'll have that mechanical, women will have that other. So unless it's based on these principles, that will work for both. You know, does that make sense? And then, you know, men have their realizations of applying that. That's all right. Now, if they're talking the principle and then how their experience in applying it and how others, then that can be useful. But if you don't get to the principle, then no matter how much detail, only if your life happens to match that detail at that moment, it'll work. And then the next moment, it'll be different. And so, you know, it's like you have, you know, millions and millions of moments, and okay, you've gotten from all these lectures 10 moments. Okay, now what about the other, you know, hundreds of millions, you know, 999,999,999. Now, what are you going to do about those ones? You know, that's the problem. So it sounds good, but it doesn't necessarily. It makes people think, great, but the point is if you think, now I have it, you know, then it won't work. Yeah. Yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi. Prabhupada had mentioned that. Because they were saying, why do some people go away and give up Christian consciousness?
Exactly. Well, it's like what to do with the soul. It's like, I might get tired of all this hard work. I need to give up all this.
No, but that's the work, and that's using the gross and subtle body. But here for the soul is the effort put into consciousness. So that's the point of tiredness. Not necessarily physical tiredness of that, because you see they're quite happily doing something else.
Yes.
It's just they get tired of that consistent endeavor in raising consciousness. Even though that's the natural position for the soul.
Yeah.
But they're not used to it, so they might get tired. But it's not an ideal position or not a recommended position.
But the soul doesn't want to stay here.
No, but they don't want to do the things. It's just like, you know, if you do your exercise, you'll feel better and all that. But sometimes you're just tired and don't want to do your exercise. So if we just always continue at it, you know, at our space, that's why it said it's recommended you move at the pace that you are able to make consistent. Better to move at a slower pace consistently than a faster pace for a short time and then stop.
Okay.
But that's why festivals are there, because then you have one day here and there where you put in more than you normally would.
Yeah.
And that just, you know, you know, just allows you to see that you can do more.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's good. That's a good analogy, I guess. You know, just like being here now, doing all the parikramas, coming and go to some shirtan mila, you sit there.
Yeah.
never go here and there.
Yes.
And I like what you said towards the end there as well, about as the principle over the technique. I have to say that a lot of the ILS things I attended, I was getting frustrated because it felt that it was about, if you do this and this, this,
it'll work. It's just the technique. But the point is it has worked, and people give these examples.
Yeah.
But the person who's making the original example, he probably understands a little bit more of the primary aspect, though they just take it for granted that there's a non-difference because they can't tell the difference. They don't know the philosophy. So they don't explain it. Or if they do, they don't distinguish that this is primary, this is secondary, so it's all taken as the same thing, so no one discriminates. And so then, even though they may be able to successfully apply it in a variety of situations, the people that hear from them will never be able to. Means absolutely never be able to. But it's because they want to know, therefore, then they give it. It's an occupation for them. You know, they write a book, they buy it, they give seminars. But in actuality, means anybody who is actually real, they know that no one will learn from it. But they want it, and they try to help, but they'll never learn. Because, you know, one is they don't have the ability, you know, the nature, much of the time. But the second is because it hasn't been distinguishing primary and secondary. So only we can actually show it. Because when you talk these primary and secondary aspects, those who are actually successful, they can catch it. They appreciate it. Devotees say, oh, that's just theory. You know, no one will appreciate that. No, the people who are successful actually do appreciate it. Because they've thought that all the time, they just didn't articulate it and make it more analytical. So for them, it's an eye opener. Because wow, okay, so there's these things. Then you show them just as there's this primary and secondary. Then there's the ultimate primary, and this is just a secondary. And so then they see, because otherwise, why do this? Okay, you're making money, but why? You know. So then that answers. So unless they deal on this kind of platform, it'll always not work and always be dissatisfying. But the advantages is now that manager will feel confident, and he'll go about his Krishna consciousness with more confidence. Now, if in that confidence he commits himself to doing the appropriate things, then it'll work. You know, but if he puts his faith into those techniques alone, rather than the traditional devotional process, then what will happen is as they apply it and it doesn't work, they may lose their confidence. And what will they blame? Krishna consciousness, not the mundane thing. And so then they may step back from Krishna consciousness, but they'll continue with that. So now they'll start going to that particular whatever it is, you know, that particular self-help guru, they'll go to their stuff or pick another one, or if that one didn't work, they'll just go to another one, rather than Krishna consciousness, the thing that can solve all these problems.
The primary.
Yeah. So that's the difference. But most don't want to hear this because they just want to, you know, they want to think that by having 10 days of discussions, now they're the world's expert. You know. But
I got the feeling that I'd heard these when I was here 2 years ago and I was doing this.
You'll hear the same thing. Because it's based on the 1990s political correctness, and then they may update it with a few little things here, you know, from this and that, because it's all the same stuff. It's just the cover will take one angle, De Bono takes another angle, and this and that, but it's all the same thing. But all the things that they talk, we talk. You know, but it's just we'll have a consistent scientific thing, how all of them can fit together. You know, so even though, you know, the secret tries to get together all these, we have the secret of the secret, so therefore, you know.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, they were way ahead of the Tony Robbins and all these guys. Saying not exactly the same, but they got their stuff directly or indirectly from these, you know, great predecessors.
Because if you observe material nature, it functions according to God's laws. So therefore, what And what we're speaking is according to Shastra, which is the documentation of God's laws. So what we say from Shastra and what they observe, they'll naturally be the same. Yeah. Difference is we're taking it from the Shastric angle. We'll have that vision. Yeah. They're taking it from their own mental speculation. So what their purpose is and all that, they'll have a different flavor. Yeah. So even though it's the same thing, the flavors are different. And ours will be complete, theirs will be partial.
And they talk about God. They can talk about God.
Yeah, it means the smart ones will. But it's in line with, by remembering God, by surrendering to God, then you can do your mechanics better. So it's not technically devotion. So all we're doing is reversing it. We're doing all these nicely to please God, rather than we're pleasing God, so my life is good.
Yeah. It's funny to hear some of the...
Let me just see, depending on the call, I may have to go or not. Yes, no, I have to take this. Hadi Bob, Hadi Bob.